Welcome to the Money Advantage Podcast, empowering business owners with the permission to think differently about money so that you can consciously choose to live a meaningful and fulfilled life now. Our passion is making money simple, fun, and doable, helping you feel great about your money and getting your money working for you so you can thrive.
Hi, and welcome back to the Money Advantage Podcast. Today, we're talking about maximizing your tax savings in 2018. I'm one of your co-hosts, Rachel Marshall, and today we have a special guest, Mark Schreiber. He's a senior partner and tax strategist with E3 Wealth. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Rachel. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, in our work with business owners, one thing really rises to the forefront of all financial strategy, and it's this. How does this way of paying for things impact my taxes? So taxes are really something that often we can be afraid of because we don't understand. We just want to run away from them. But the critical thing is really understanding taxes so that we can really be ahead of the game, ahead of the curve, and know how to maximize our tax deductions and minimize the tax. So overpaying taxes is one of the most impactful money leaks that we see for business owners because their money is flowing out of their control when they pay more tax than they need to. So today, instead of stepping away from that conversation, we're going to lean into that conversation. We really believe that empowerment and education are tools that give you the confidence to take action, and understanding empowers you to make better decisions. So 2018, we're right up on the heels of that. It's a brand new year. Instead of taxes being something that make you cringe, we want to empower you with a mindset, tips, knowledge, and a strategy to help you keep more of your money by maximizing your tax deductions. So here's the best way we can start off 2018 prepared to make it your best year for tax savings. So Mark, as we get into this conversation, tell us a little bit about your backstory and how that led you into the world of becoming a CPA.
Yeah, Rachel. So I've been a CPA for, 35 years, a certificate. I'm licensed in the state of Missouri. And backstory. Yeah, I started with, out of college, started with a large CPA firm, one of the big eight back then, Deloitte. And then, been in public accounting, all 35 years, a little bit of industry experience, the mining industry. Helping people, really gravitating towards the tax and tax planning side, some trust, estate, is a passion, that side of the business, but, not so much on the audit or accounting side, but yeah. Just been helping small business owners, entrepreneurs, individuals, with tax strategies. And you said two key words there. It's a big leak, the tax payment. It is. And afraid was the other word you used. And I think people are afraid of the IRS. They're afraid of, not understanding the taxes. And I think it's so important to reach out to your tax professional and do tax planning. There's a big difference between tax planning and tax compliance. And I think my colleagues in the industry will agree. It's just such a time crunch during tax season that it's hard to do any type of tax planning. So this is a good time. January is a good time to really be thinking about the new year and how I can stop that leakage of outflow.
That's awesome. And that's one of the things that I see very commonly, kind of in the whole financial space, but specifically in taxes, is that, yes, a lot of people are very reactive. They just say, here's what happened in my last year with my accounting. Therefore, how do I prepare the taxes that match up to what I have already done? And instead of just looking backwards for the tax, we really do want to have that forward-looking perspective and say, how do I strategize and set up the best proactive forward-looking tax strategy to make sure not only am I maximizing my tax savings this year, but every year going forward as well. And I know that's a key passion of yours, and it's one that our clients are very interested in making sure that they are grabbing a hold of so that they can really have that proactive tax planning. So I'm really excited to dig into how they can be forward-thinking in their approach to their tax strategy this coming year.
Yeah, definitely.
So what would you say? You mentioned something a second ago. A lot of CPAs will recommend tax saving strategies for this year that actually end up paying more tax on the income in the future. So can you help us all to understand what the difference is between tax deferral and tax deduction, and how one of them helps you to maximize taxes every year going forward?
Well, I mean, you said tax deduction, tax deferral. Tax deduction, are items that you can deduct off your general income this year. Things like, we're 2 weeks away from the year end. Business owners, obviously a lot of CPAs will recommend, if you got purchases you're going to make, go ahead and make them. If you're going to pay, maybe state income tax, pay them before December 31st. If you're an individual, those are type of deductions. When we talk about deferral, we're generally talking about income. And what we're recommending right now, based on this new Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, is to go ahead and defer any income. That, say you're a consultant, or you can get paid. I just had a client that said, "Hey, can I?" I talked to my subcontractor, engineer. Should I defer a $40,000 payment to next year? And I said, "Definitely." Mm-hmm. Just because of the tax rates are lowering, pretty much across the board. Yeah, tax deduction, a lot of people confuse a tax deduction with a tax credit. A credit is dollar for dollar tax credit. A deduction is a deduction off your marginal tax bracket. So if you're in a 30% tax bracket, you get a 30%, equivalent to a 30% deduction, a dollar for dollar credit. So people get confused about it. Credit is dollar for dollar. So like a child tax credit. They're going to increase that to $2,000. So if you have a kid for under age 18, and next year, saying you're going to get a $2,000 tax credit. Well, that's dollar for dollar.
Right. So that's actually $2,000 of tax savings.
Yes,
whereas if you have a deduction of $2,000, well, then if you're in a, 30% tax bracket, that's a 30% portion of the $2,000.
That's right. It's a $600 dollar for dollar credit, tax savings.
Right. Okay. And then also, I just wanted to come back to the deferral piece. If you defer a portion of your compensation this year, so a lot of times if people are using tax deferred vehicles, things like 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, they might defer a portion of their income and not pay tax on that this year, but then they will pay tax in the future. So it's not a really long-term forward-looking way of maximizing tax savings for the rest of your life, because when you have deferred tax and not paid it today, the IRS does catch up with you later and say, "Hey, you still owe us that money that you didn't pay the taxes on earlier," right?
No, you're right. I mean, the deferral, you're getting a, like in a 401k or the IRA, you have until April 15th to make, for this year. But definitely, I mean, a deferral, you're just deferring, kicking the can down the road to pay the tax. We've been ingrained with the thought of that's the right thing to do. And it's not necessarily the right thing to do for all people. Paying your tax some now, mm-hmm. and utilizing other strategies could benefit just as well. And you're in control of the money versus waiting, till 59 and a half or 60 to access that money. But yeah, that's
absolutely
a big difference. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that we always come back to, is how can we maximize the control of our capital, but also maximize our cash flow. And so when we're looking at both of those things, so yes, if we deferred some tax, we put money over into tax deferred assets and it's sitting there for us, we might have more cash flow today because we didn't pay tax on that money yet, but we also have lost that control. And I just want to really push that into the home plate area here, just as you had mentioned that the idea that when you don't pay tax today, you've deferred the tax, you've also given up control of that capital. And that's really not the position we want to be in. We've also given up control because we don't know what future taxation will be or what the laws will be at that point, whenever it's 10, 20, 30 years down the road, and you're looking to access that money and now paying at that future tax rate. We don't have control of that either. So just kind of some distinctions that are really important to know when you are doing tax planning. So would you talk a little bit about the idea of different entity types? So I know that you can have a sole proprietor built around your business, or you can have an LLC entity structure, or a S-corp or a C-corp. And when you have a different entity structure, that changes what type of taxation you're looking at. So can you talk a little bit about that and just kind of as we get into what types of deductions a business owner can take, first talking about how the entity structure might impact that.
Sure. So a lot of people that are, you know, are self-employed or sole proprietors. So that goes on a, you know, Schedule C, a profit or loss from business. It's taxed as a self-employed person. Whether you're an LLC or just, a, you know, Mark Schreiber CPA, it's a self-employment income. You pay your ordinary tax on that, just like wages. But in addition, you are the owner of the company. You're self-employed. You're a single member LLC. That gets taxed an additional layer called self-employment tax. That is the 7.65 FICA and Medicare, just like you would pay if you were an employee. The trouble is you're also the owner of your business, so you're paying the other 7.65, so roughly 15% self-employment tax on top of regular income tax. It's a big distinction between income tax and self-employment tax. So that self-employment tax is on the net income. So if somebody grosses $100,000, they after expenses, they net $50,000, they're going to pay income tax on the $50,000 on a joint return, along with their maybe they're married, their spouse's income. And then you're going to pay self-employment tax on that $50,000. So the other way would be a lot of entrepreneurs elect to be an S corporation. S corporations, you're still the owner, but you are a corporation. IRS wants you to pay yourself a salary. That salary is just like any other salary. It's taxed as ordinary income, you know, income. And then obviously you're the owner of the S corp. You're going to pay both sides of the self-employment tax. You're going to defer, you know, you're going to withhold 7.65 from your wages and you're going to pay the match, the employer match of 7.65. Mm-hmm. The key with the S corp is always been, well, you know, I netted 200. I'm going to pay myself $100,000 in wages and I'm going to send myself, just pay myself, write checks for $100,000 as quote S distribution. Well, that's not deductible in the S corp. That flows through on a K-1 as $100,000 of net profit that goes on your income tax return. So if you follow me, you've got $100,000 of wages on your tax return. You've got $100,000 of S distribution. You save the self-employment tax on the S distribution amount. Obviously, the IRS doesn't like that. We just went to tax seminar last week, and we asked the instructor, hey, what's a good ratio of, you know, salary to S distribution? And we pretty much, the consensus was, you know, you got to pay yourself a reasonable salary out of the S corp. You can't pay $200,000 in S distribution, avoid all payroll taxes. So I think the consensus in the room of 300 people was, hey, you know, keep it around 50-50 salary to S distribution. However, I will warn you, and if we have an updated podcast, this new tax law coming down for 18, there are some really advantageous rules coming out for S corps. They're saying there's going to be a labor component to that S distribution, meaning you're going to be paying some more self-employment tax. So I'm not sure if it's going to be advantageous. We really need to keep an eye on this tax act as it gets finalized, because I've been telling self-employed people, go ahead and elect S corp, which is pretty easy to do. You do it at the beginning of the year, first 75 days of the year, elect S corp status, and go ahead and take advantage of this tax rule of, you know, distributions. But we're kind of on hold right now, Rachel, with that strategy.
Sure. So that helps someone maybe think through their tax strategy for this current year because it still applies to today's tax, right?
Correct. Yes.
Nope. And yes. So... Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to clarify kind of what you were saying then is to be in that position of having that S corp election, you're then able to save on the 7.5 or 7.65% self-employment tax side when you pay yourself as a K-1 distribution or the S distribution, as opposed to paying yourself all in wages.
Yeah, you're saving to some point six and double. You're saving the entire self-employment tax, 15%. So yeah, right now it's okay, but come 18, that is going to change.
So that would be then in this current year, kicking more of your income, your personal income that you're paying to yourself from your business over into that S distribution as a K-1 would then save you mm-hmm. that 15.3. Is it 15.3% mm-hmm. total in that tax? So that's something that's not available to somebody who just is a sole proprietor, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. So thank you for sharing that. And again, a really important reason to keep our eye on the tax changes. And Mark, we may have you on again. We're definitely going to be having some additional tax conversations going into 2018 after the law has been finalized, just to see what the strategy is going to look like that's going to make the most sense going forward in that year. So tax is something that's always changing and we want to keep abreast of.
Yeah.
So can you then, if you're a sole proprietor, is there still any type of tax savings that you can have? Is there any tax advantage at all to being a sole proprietor?
Well, you know, advantage, you can deduct pretty much all your normal expenses. You know, your home office, your vehicle, your cell phone, meals and entertainment, travel. You do get a self-employed health insurance deduction if you pay it out, you know, for your family. There's some, you know, hiring your kids. I won't get into that, but you could, you know, save some payroll taxes on that. And their income is tax-free up to a certain amount. It's still an ongoing, you know, entity way to do business as a self-employed person. You just really need to look and maximize your deductions, keep your receipts. Some CPAs are more aggressive than others, but I take the stand, you know, home office, the IRS has made that very simple now. There's a simplified method. Just take the square footage of that office times $5 up to a maximum $1,500 deduction without keeping track of all the necessary, you know, expenses of the home. Challenge your CPA or tax preparer. Hey, you know, let's think outside the box a little bit here. Mileage is a big thing. I always get questions, do I lease or buy the car? You know, there's mm-hmm. advantages on both. If you drive a whole lot of miles, and generally we take the standard mileage deduction, 55 cents. I think it's going up 54 cents this year, next year. Cell phone. I mean, yeah, I get it. You know, it's usually on a plan. Just, you know, be reasonable. Take 75%, you know, of your cell phone expense. Mm-hmm. Same thing on internet, travel, any travel, you know, a lot of, whether you're in sales or whatever, I mean, everybody's in sales. You know, I tell my clients, you know, everybody could be a potential customer. Okay. So just keep your receipts, whether you're talking to people, you know, you should be talking about business. And then, you know, people in real estate, that's a whole nother topic. You're not self-employed. You're in the, you know, maybe you got some rental property or real estate you're renting out. That's a whole nother area that, you know, can be, we have a lot of clients with real estate, that can, you know, use different strategies.
That's awesome. And so just to clarify as well, so these are business deductions that you can take that will reduce your taxable income in the business that you can apply no matter what entity type you have. So if you're a sole proprietor, you're a C corp, you're an S corp, you're an LLC, LLC tax is an S corp, whatever your structure, you're able to think in terms of what can be deducted as a business expense.
Yeah, right? That's right.
Excellent. Was there any other specific maybe tricks or top tax deductions that you see missed by a lot of other CPAs that really could save a business owner client a lot in taxes?
From a business owner standpoint, make sure, you know, they're up on the depreciation that, you know, you can expense all your, you know, equipment purchased. If you've got a large, you know, buying a heavier vehicle. Those, they're really going to be lenient going forward on depreciation for a small business. They're increasing the Section 179 expense. That allows you to just deduct it rather than depreciate it over 5 years. They're increasing that to, you know, right now it's $500,000. You can pretty much expense and depreciate any equipment, vehicles, you know, that qualify. So just be aware that the depreciation is going to be very liberalized. You know, as far as other deductions for business owners, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I would just, you know, definitely if you're self-employed, go there. You should be provided a checklist of deductions and, you know, spend some time on that. Now, the big expenses, like I said, are, you know, vehicle, you know, travel, meals, home office, things like that.
Very good. And do you want to speak to it all? Sometimes I think there can be travel that happens that you might be able to find a business purpose for that travel in order to make that into a business travel as opposed to a personal travel. Can you kind of differentiate what should be truly classified as a personal travel and should not be a business deduction, and what should be classified as a business?
I mean, travel. So, you know, if your husband or wife, I would make them a officer of the company or a board member of your company. If you're self-employed, it's tough, but you could, you know, pay them subcontract agreement, you know, some kind of an agreement that they're helping you. But that way, you know, pretty much all your travel, whether it's continuing education together, business trips. I mean, there's got to be a business purpose somehow. But, you know, the more aggressive tax preparer would, you know, look at that. Yeah, if he or she is part of your business, then, you know, document it, what the trip is for. And you know, whether it's you got meetings in Hawaii, you can have a board meeting in Hawaii for all I care, you know, as long as it's documented and you got it in your minutes and you guys are officers of the company and, you know, you got to be reasonable. But that's a good way, is to add your spouse if you're married to the travel component. Same thing for continuing education. A lot of my colleagues go on, you know, cruises I must have been on a, you know, Western CPE. You go to the, you know, Nantucket or wherever, and you take your 8 hours, you know, 6 hours of CPA that day, and then you've got your you know, rest of the day. So, yeah, there's ways to structure that travel component. You know, if it's challenged, what are they going to, you know, IRS going to do? They're going to say, hey, you can't deduct half of it. Okay, so fine. Sure. Or portion of it. But, yeah, you know, just be reasonable and document it.
Sure. And I know that everything comes back to that documentation and making sure that it, in fact, did have legitimate business purpose and that it is documented. It's not just something that's in your mind or a guess at something.
Yeah.
So that's something that you always want to keep in mind, because I have heard as well that it's the goal of the IRS to audit every small business owner. It's not just the ones that are maximizing tax deductions. It's all small business owners. And so we want to be prepared for that in advance, just making sure that your records and your books are clean and up to date and that everything does have a legitimate reason for why that purchase was made.
Yeah.
So can you then, I wanted to talk real briefly, you mentioned charitable contributions and how that can be used with regards to taxes. Can you share a little bit about that?
So there's no real changes in the tax law on the charity side, even with this new tax act. You know, typically people are familiar with, you know, cash donations to 501c3 charities. The other area we've been looking at tax strategy wise is not on the non-cash contributions. This is where, you know, typical taxpayers just donate clothes or what have you. There's a couple other strategies out there called deconstruction, where at least in the Midwest, where they're, you know, we've got a lot of in the inner city, across the United States, Chicago, St. Louis, you know, Houston, older brick buildings. And what they're doing is they're deconstructing these rather than demolishing them and sending them to the landfill. They actually, deconstruct it, you know, brick by brick, and there's a lot of value in that. And so you're seeing strategies where taxpayers can get engaged in this strategy whereby they, you know, can leverage their deduction almost 4-to-1. It's something that that we've looked into, and we've done our due diligence, and we're working with a group on this, at least in St. Louis. So yeah, you know, maybe a $50,000. It's not a contribution. It's actually the taxpayer has to take possession of the you know, the property and title, and has to hold it 1 year, and then they get the, you know, a larger appraisal, you know, official appraisal comes with it, and that's a, you know, pretty much a 4-to-1 advantage. The other area that we've seen,
so they're basically, I just wanted to ask, so in that sense, then essentially the person is investing, buying a property, and then being able to use that as a charitable.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it an invest. It's you know, it's okay. a strategy that's can be complimented as a charitable deduction, because these bricks, these okay. materials go to have an organization like Habitat for Humanity. So
I see. And, okay.
You know, they have to be comfortable with, but that is one way. The other way we've seen these strategies of donating, or investing in easements where, you know, they're vetted, and this is where they, you know, basically you're donating this land to the, whether it's a federal, you know, wildlife or whatever. And there's a tremendous 4-to-5-to-1 advantage on your taxes. And again, these are, you know, we're doing due diligence on these, but those are areas that, you know, the other one is a lot of states, charities will have a state tax credit. I don't know where you're, you know, in Virginia, but in Missouri, we have organizations where you donate $1,000 to the organization, but there's also a Missouri tax credit up to 50%. So when you come down to it, okay, you're in a, you know, 30% federal bracket. So that $1,000 worth $300 to you, but then you add your Virginia or Missouri tax credit of 50% on $500. Okay. You just save $500 state tax, $300 federal. It really costs you maybe $200.
Okay.
To make a charitable donation. And we've got people, you know, even advisors here that they utilize that a lot. So something to check with your state. I know we have, you know, Meals on Wheels here and another organization I work with, Arlo Haven, that both have these state credits.
Interesting. Well, that's definitely something I want to look into a little bit more. I'm not aware of that in the state of Virginia, but thank you for bringing that to my attention. That's something that I think a lot of our clients would be very interested in as well. So I'll have to post in the show notes what we discover on that in terms of the state of Virginia. So that's great. That's great. Was there anything else that you would like to talk about on cost segregation? I know you mentioned depreciating equipment with that Section 179 expense. Was there anything else with cost segregation that we can discuss for business
owners? So anybody, a business owner or anybody involved in real estate, this is a legitimate, it's called a cost segregation study, and they basically break down the components of the building, whether it's a residential, a commercial, maybe you're doing a rehab on a commercial building, to tenant improvements. And basically, Rachel, what the study does, and it's an engineering study, and some CPA firms do it. We have a couple resources that we work with. It basically gives you a detailed report of what you can, you're basically accelerating depreciation.
Okay.
And what that does is increase the cash flow to the investor or to the business owner. It's really, I wish my colleagues were, you know, really more open, my CPA colleagues were more open to this idea, because, I mean, there is a cost to the study, but I have done these before for clients, and the deduction is you're just accelerating, you know, that deduction up front. Now, so, yeah, at the end, you know, if you sell that building, you know, 20 years from now, sure, you've got a bigger gain and recash, but that's 20 years from now or 15 years from now. That deduction is worth a lot of money up front. I just can't stress to your listeners that they need to look at cost segregation if the building is more than, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars.
That's fabulous. And so from my knowledge, which is more limited than yours, of course, but it has to do with real estate property itself and potentially the carpet or the flooring or the lighting or something can be deducted at a different rate than other portions of the building. Am I understanding what that is correctly?
Exactly. And they'll also get into, you mentioned lighting, they'll get into it I think some of the energy credits are going away, but they'll look at, you know, research and development. They'll look at some other credits while you're doing this improvements. But yeah, you're basically accelerating those components.
So meaning you're depreciating more of it more quickly because you're compacting the depreciation into a shorter time window, meaning there's more cost being depreciated per year, which is more of a deduction, which saves more in tax.
Yes. And it's an approved IRS code section. The cost benefit, and they'll do these for free, you know, no charge. They'll look at your building. They will do the study. And then, you know, they'll do the cost benefit analysis for you.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous. So for anyone in real estate or business owners that own their properties, and you said any buildings over 100,000, 200,000 in value.
Yeah, it's got to be, you know, worthwhile. Even if you've bought the building 2-3 years ago, they can go back and they can do a catch up, and it's a big deduction.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Okay. So definitely a key nugget takeaway from this conversation here. So kind of in wrapping up, you've shared a lot throughout this interview today about different tax savings, different deductions that you can look at. And you've alluded to a lot of what might be on the horizon with some of the changes in potential tax reform. So at this point, knowing that we don't have all the answers yet, and there's still a lot of decisions being made, what are some of the key things that we might want to watch for in that potential tax reform so we can be the most proactive and prepared?
Yeah. For individuals, fewer tax brackets, increase in the standard deduction, you know, married from 12,000 to 24, it's in both the Senate and the House bill, repeal the personal exemption. Again, the personal exemption is that $4,000 deduction everybody gets for, you know, you, your spouse, your child.
Mm-hmm.
However, they've doubled the standard deduction. So, you know, look at your itemized deductions last year. What were they? Or for 17, you know, 24,000, you know, they're only going to allow you to deduct mortgage interest on one home. So okay. Our clients that have a second home, that interest is no longer deductible. Okay, well, but that might be, you might not even be itemizing your deduction because you might be taking the 24,000 they're giving you. But it's important that mortgage interest deduction is changing, and sale of your original home. It's that, you know, right now that's tax free gain up to like $500,000. Well, you had to live there 2 out of 5 years. Now it's 5 out of 8 years. You know, it might affect somebody moving up, you know, a starter home, and then, you know, 3 years later you buy a bigger home. So there's going to be a phase out. They're going to tax part of that now. You're going to see maximum rates on, you know, business income. Like I said, the S corp is still open, but C corps, you know, you're going to see definitely a lower rate. Child credit increase across the board. So if you have a child, it was, you know, it's going to go up to $2,000 deduction. It was $1,000.
Okay.
AMT, it hits a lot of people. That was not meant the way it is today to affect this many people. One bill has it being modified, the other eliminated. That's really one key issue we need to keep an eye on.
And just for our listeners, AMT, can you, what is that?
Alternative minimum tax was instituted so that you paid a minimum amount of tax. But one of the you know, issues is it the exemption. This was brought back in 1986, I believe. It's never been indexed. So as people are both working and made more money, this alternative minimum tax is affected. It's like 70% of taxpayers. It's crazy. So they never index that exemption amount. So that's something to really, it bothers a lot of tax clients, you know, a lot of people.
Okay.
Like I said, they're going to increase bonus depreciation, Section 179. That's going to be a positive. I guess to wrap up, you know, I follow this taxfoundation.org. It's a nonpartisan organization. You know, and last I just checked their website this morning, they did a scenario on like 8 or 9 different individuals, a single person earning $30,000 to a couple earning $2 million. And every single one analyzed this new tax act in every situation saves some percentage of income tax.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, the politicians can say what, you know, they'll say what they want, but from what I'm seeing, it is a positive for the average, for the mass affluent, for the even the business owners out there.
That's great. And thank you for speaking to business owners as well, as it's the primary base that are our listeners and the people that we primarily work to serve. So thank you for bringing that to the forefront here. So I just wanted to kind of recap. We've had a great conversation here, talked a lot about the different ways that you can be prepared with tax planning, really kind of equipping yourself to be mindful of what you can do going forward in the future to make sure you're maximizing tax deductions and really taking advantage of leveraging the tax code in your favor, especially as a business owner. And then Mark has really talked through some of the ways that you can do that with some of the cost segregation, depreciation. He mentioned home office and vehicle mileage expense. There's a lot of options for you to be proactive and planning in advance to make sure that you are writing off as many business expenses that you can. And then also just keeping an eye towards what's happening with tax reform. And again, we're going to be having several more tax conversations as that law continues to unfold. So kind of in closing here, we want to make sure that our business owners and listeners are making strides and moving forward in this way of actually saving in taxes. So what would it look like to work with you if they did want to have a conversation with you in the early part of 2018 to make sure that 2018 taxes are really planned in advance so that they know what to be looking for and how to handle their accounting so this lines up to really be in their most advantageous position? How would they reach out to you?
Rachel, you know, I don't prepare taxes anymore. We do here at, you know, E3 Tax Group, but my passion and mission is to have entrepreneurs really take a look at their situation earlier in the year and, you know, think outside the box about how they can utilize some of these tax planning strategies. I guess the best way to get a hold of me is, you know, email mschreiber@e3wealth.com. Phone number here in St. Louis, 314-822-4440. They can definitely, Jessica here can get a hold of me wherever I'm at. And I think the main thing for entrepreneurs, they really need to take a step back sometime during the year, you know, and it can be early in the year. Let's take a look at last year and do a projection of, you know, some of these strategies.
That's awesome. And we'll make sure that we have your contact information in the show notes as well, both the phone number and your email address. And again, I do encourage you as a listener to reach out in the early part of 2018 to do that look back into last year and really be forward thinking for planning out 2018. So I just want to encourage you. Thank you for listening today. We hope this episode will help you know how to take action and save taxes in 2018. So tax savings means more cash flow and more of your money in your control right where it belongs so that you can use it to create more value for more people. So I wanted to just say special thanks to you, Mark Schreiber, and thank you for sharing your wisdom with the Money Advantage community
today.
You bet,
Rachel. It's been fun. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. And success leaves clues. So model the successful few, not the struggling crowd, and build a life and business you love. To learn how high-performing entrepreneurs 10x or more returns on liquid capital without giving up quick access to cash, go to themoneyadvantage.com/liquid-capital to get The Unfair Advantage, your 20-minute easy-to-read guide on maximizing your savings.
Thank you for listening to the Money Advantage podcast. Today's show notes and resources are available for you on themoneyadvantage.com. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review. If you have any questions or desire to speak with a qualified financial professional after listening to today's podcast, we encourage you to reach out to us at hello@themoneyadvantage.com or check us out at themoneyadvantage.com. The opinions and views expressed here are for informational purposes only. This material is educational in nature and should not be deemed as a solicitation of any specific product or service. All investments involve risk and a potential loss of principal. Kalos Capital Incorporated nor Kalos Management Incorporated offer tax or legal advice. Please consult with a tax advisor or attorney for advice regarding the impact on your portfolio. Securities offered through Kalos Capital Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC, MSRB, and investment advisory services offered through Kalos Management Incorporated and registered investment advisor, both located at 11525 Parkwood Circle, Alpharetta, Georgia. E3 Consultants Group is not an affiliate or subsidiary of Kalos Capital Incorporated or Kalos Management Incorporated.